We talk a lot about periods, but we don't talk about this period, perimenopause. But barrier-breaking intimates brand NYX is here to change that. After normalizing leak-proof underwear, NYX is now on a mission to shine light on the invisible chapter of menopause with their new video, The Invisible Period. While everyone who menstruates will experience perimenopause, 90% of us feel completely unprepared for it. That's because this phase is completely omitted from our school curriculum and our conversations. But that's all about to change starting November 7th, when the Invisible Period film debuts on NYX's website and on their social media channels. Go to NYX.com to learn more. Okay, so true story, and I do talk about this in today's interview, but when I heard that today's guest wanted to come on the podcast and talk to me about perimenopause, my first thought was, cool, what exactly is perimenopause? It's one of those terms that I've seen written down in articles and medical information, but actually didn't know the technical definition. And as I'm sitting there reading the email about the conversation that I'm about to have, I thought, well, this is kind of wild that, you know, I'm a mom, I have 5 kids, I'm the co-founder of a platform for women and mothers, and I actually don't exactly know what we mean when we say the term perimenopause. And of course we have to have today's guest on because knowledge is power, and there are so many aspects of being a woman, especially in our world today, where we're discovering all kinds of parts of us that were hidden, things that were seen as secondary, just the reality of being a woman and mother so often in our culture, not seen as centered, right? Whether in the workplace or in medical environments. And so today's conversation to me was an absolute no-brainer and a really important way to start the conversation around understanding what we go through during what is all too often an invisible period of our lives known as perimenopause. Hey, Mama, welcome to the Motherly Podcast, where we have honest conversations about modern motherhood. I'm Liz Tennedy. I'm a co-founder here at Motherly, and I'm also a mother of 5 kids myself. Today's guest is Joanna Griffiths, president and founder of NYX and the mom of 3 kids. Joanna began her career really working in entertainment, and she came up with the idea for NYX, which is a revolutionary period underwear and intimates brand, while she was getting her MBA. She launched NYX in 2013 and in 2022 sold 80% of the company in a historic deal, especially one for women founders. In this episode, Joanna shares really how hard it was to get male investors on board with her company and why she believes that we still need to break barriers about talking about our periods. And now Joanna's turning her attention to another aspect of our period that she thinks we're not all talking about enough, perimenopause. NYX's new video, which debuts November 7th on their website and social media, shines a light on this invisible period that can start as early as your 30s. I know that so many women, myself included, feel unprepared for this shift. So today's conversation is how we can change that. Joanna Griffiths, welcome to the Motherly Podcast.
Thanks, Liz. Great to be here.
So, do you think you were prepared for motherhood?
No. Is anyone? I think if I started going down the rabbit hole of what it meant to be prepared, I would have put off having kids longer and longer. So I sort of dove in headfirst, I guess you could say.
Was there a moment in that headfirst journey where you were like, oh, like this is what I was not prepared for?
Yeah, I think there's been a handful of moments. The first one that comes to mind is my postpartum experience with my son, my first child. And that I thought I would have been prepared for. Honestly, I'd been working at NYX. We were developing a maternity line. I'd been doing all of these focus groups with new moms and new parents and learning about breastfeeding and their experiences. But that first few weeks at home post-baby really, really shocked me to the core and really opened my eyes to the fact that we don't share enough about what that experience is like. The second moment that comes to mind was when I found out that I was having twins. So it was during COVID. I'm from Toronto. I'm from Canada. We were shut down for like far longer, I think, than the United States were. And so I went to my early scan by myself and found out I was having twins and came home and was telling my partner, Dave, about it. And we both looked at each other and we're like, what are we going to do? Because our son was a little over 12 months at the time. And it dawned on us, we were going to have three kids under two. And just this absolute panic of like, how on earth is this going to work?
That's a lot. Let's talk a little bit about having twins. Not everyone has that experience. And I feel like, at least from the outside, because I'm not a twin mom, is there like a new level of motherhood that gets unlocked with twins? Or is there something you need to do in order to manage two babies at one time?
I think there's a new level of being comfortable relinquishing control. And that is very much at odds, I think, with what you think about when being a parent, like try and control the situation, the environment, read as much as you can. And I think having twins and especially having three kids that were that young at the same time really made me realize that you have to be comfortable in the chaos. And I'm an entrepreneur. I thrive in chaos. I'm good with unknowns, but it was just a whole other level of realizing that you are not in charge.
I just so love, as a fellow entrepreneur, how you put that kind of idea of not being in charge. And obviously, you've been in charge of so many things. You've accomplished so much, and in business, and as a parent to twins, or maybe just a parent in general, there's this aspect of it being a dance and I can control what I can control. And there is so much that I can't control. How do you find your footing, or like, how do you define your role? Because you are the parent, it is your family, you are in charge, but maybe not in the way of like directing them how you maybe perceived you were going to be able to.
I mean, honestly, it taught me so much about being a manager and being an entrepreneur and being a business person as well. Because I think as a female founder, and I have a lot of friends that are female founders, you care so much about this business. You really want it to succeed. And you, in the early days, I think, try to control absolutely everything that you can. No one cares quite as much as you do. You live, breathe, you sleep, you think about it nonstop. And so when I had my kids, it really, really taught me to let go and also forced me in a lot of ways to delegate more, to ask for help. I was never someone who was good at asking for help. And so I learned a lot through that process. And I actually think that our business is better for it.
I love that message. I did find it so interesting that you mentioned that you had started NYX before you became a mom and you were working on postpartum and maternity and working in this space. Why did you start this company then? Tell us about your founding journey and what led you to this moment.
I started NYX. We just celebrated 10 years of being in business and shipping products. Thank you. Yeah, big milestone. But I really started with a simple idea, which was to create leak-proof underwear, also known as period underwear now. So I learned just how many people had a strong need for this product. And not just on the period side, but when it comes to stress incontinence and often candidly triggered during pregnancy and post-pregnancy, where your pelvic floor weakens, you kind of need some extra support. And really felt like I couldn't imagine being a new parent and having my only options be to go to a drugstore and to buy Depends. Nothing on the market really spoke to me. And when I realized in my research just how big of a toll this was having on people, their self-confidence, their relationships, you know, their day-to-day lives. People stop exercising, they stop having sex, they sometimes stop going to work. And so really feeling like, wow, if there was a product out there that could help solve for some of these very, very human problems that no one's talking about, that would be a good use of my time and energy. And so that's how we started. We started with that idea and launched with the product in market a little over a decade ago. And it's been a wild journey to kind of see the evolution of that product, that category, and really see something that when I first started NYX, people were like, oh yeah, that makes sense. But they were kind of like, it was too taboo. And then now to see it be so widely adopted, I mean, it's outpacing the tampon globally in terms of adoption rates, and really changing the way that so many people live their day-to-day lives.
How come this product didn't exist before? I guess I want to know, like, women, girls were half the population. These are almost universal challenges. So, like, why do you think there was this sort of wide open space for a product like NYX?
It's really interesting. If you look at kind of the macro environmental trends that were going on at the time, a lot of underwear brands were being run by men. And so a lot of the products that were being developed to be worn for like 5 seconds or 5 minutes, and were candidly a lot more about the person who is seeing you in the product than the wearer themselves. So I think that sort of dynamic that was at play with a lot of the largest brands being run by men instead of women played a big factor. I think if you look at just the lack of funding that go to female-led businesses, it's really hard to get started when the venture community is not there.
Yeah, specifically, you're in a boardroom with a bunch of men telling them about women who pee in their underwear. How do you think that's going to land?
It didn't land well. I think I was probably overly optimistic because I'd been working on the concept for so long, and I'd been working on it while I was at business school, and I got everyone in my class so comfortable with this idea because it was the only thing I would talk about.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there's Joanna. Oh, she's going to talk to you about peeing in her underwear. Okay, cool.
Exactly. But it was a highly, highly taboo conversation. And I think when I was doing the research for it, the stress incontinence side specifically was kind of deemed as one of the last remaining medical taboos. I think we've seen now there are obviously more, and we'll talk about some of them today, but it was kind of up there with Viagra, where if someone could solve this problem and if we could take something that one in three people experience and break it into the mainstream, that there would be a really big room for innovation. But we tackle the unsexy problems last.
Related to fundraising, I did read that you sort of publicly stated that you refused to raise money from anyone who doubted your ability to run your company as both pregnant and as a mother. I'm guessing that came from somewhere, like from a real experience that you had. So what happened?
Yeah, so it came from actually several years of experience. So in the beginning days when I was raising money for NYX, much like you described, I would go into boardrooms or meeting rooms, and there weren't a lot of women in venture at the time. And it would be almost the same conversation every single time. The person I was pitching would kind of realize the topic that I was there to talk to them about, because they would be in back-to-back pitches all day and not really know what I was there to talk about. They would stop the meeting and go and grab any woman that they possibly could from the office, like just run into the hallway, grab anyone that identified as a woman and bring them in. And then ask them, do you have this problem? Do you pee when you sneeze? Do you bleed, like leak on your period? And this is like very, very intimate questions to ask a coworker. And so that became like a focus group of one. And so I got a lot of feedback in the early days. You know, this would make a cute lifestyle business. This idea feels really niche. I'm not sure if the market's there. And meanwhile, like you said, you know, 50% of the population menstruates, like this is like a big market. These are real problems. And so it kind of went through that journey. And then the business became strong enough where it sort of could stand on its own ground, and it becomes more about the metrics and the growth that you're seeing. And I still would get faced with similar criticism. So when it came time for me to do our first real fundraise, I made a pretty big decision that even though I was pregnant and I knew I was having twins, that I wanted to close this round of financing before giving birth. And so the business was doing so well. We had best in class metrics. I built out a really good team. We had an amazing brand. And I was overly optimistic that I wasn't going to face the same kind of feedback. And so I worked with investment bankers this time, ended up doing like a speed round of investor dating where I pitched, I don't know, 30 to 40 investors all in one day in like 20 minute increments. And the feedback at the end of that day was that there was a lot of interest, but would I consider moving the timing of the raise because it was coming up that people were concerned about me being pregnant. Some comments like, no one wants to be the last money in before she has twins. Is she going to take the money and run? Is she going to like stop showing up to work? All these different things. And so I was faced with a decision. I could let that criticism change the path that I had for my team and my company, or I could take a stand. And so I decided really quickly in that moment that anyone who said anything about my ability to be a mom and run a company was cut from the process. And I just felt, this was 2021, 2022, that if you had the audacity to say those things out loud, what were you thinking that you weren't saying? And would you actually be the kind of person who I would want at the decision-making table for Nix? And so I stood my ground. And, you know, I like to say that even easy decisions can sometimes feel hard because you just don't feel like you should be in that spot. And then ironically enough, when it came time to announce our fundraise, I had probably an hour-long interview with the largest newspaper in Canada. And they asked me about the fundraising and pregnant. And I mentioned a really small anecdote that this had happened. And it ended up being the headline of the article. And again, I was so nervous about that article coming out. I thought there was going to be criticism or backlash that I was entitled, you know, the like difficult woman kind of narrative. Even though I am a difficult woman, and I don't know why I try to pretend that I'm not, but I still was nervous. And actually, my dad was the one who was like, Joanna, this is such an important story that people need to hear. Let them run it. Don't worry about what's going to happen. And that story went on to become the most shared article in the history of the business section of that newspaper. It got shared tens of thousands of times around the world and translated. And I think it spoke to a lot of people, not just entrepreneurs, but anyone who's kind of felt like they were being held back or discriminated against because they were juggling this very kind of real part of being a human where you have your personal life and your family and you have your professional life. So I'm glad I said something. I hate that I was even in a position where I had to say something. But at the end of the day, I think the last laugh was really on the people who said those things, because as the story went, the Friday afternoon at around 4 p.m., we closed our $50 million Series B. The Monday morning on International Women's Day, I delivered my twin daughters. So literally like two business days later. And then the Tuesday, while I was still in hospital, I received the email from Essity, who are now our acquired the majority of the business and are our long-term partners, saying that they wanted to partner with us on a go forward.
Well, and thank you again for, in so many ways that you have through your advocacy and the company that you've built, speak out loud some of these things that either we're embarrassed to speak about or we don't want to be the ones to say it. So it's been obviously a pattern in just talking about the so-called taboos that are still out there associated with just the biological reality of being a woman and being alive through your childbearing years. So when I found out that you wanted to come on the Motherly Podcast and talk to me and share with our listeners all about perimenopause, the thought that went through my head was, awesome. What exactly is perimenopause? That's a true story. And then I thought, okay, this is the point here. It is a reality of our lives, and it is this unspoken thing. So what is it exactly? Because I did not know.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. So oftentimes we talk about menopause, and menopause is actually a singular day. So menopause is the 1 year anniversary of your very last period. And it's one day and it's a moment in time. Perimenopause is that transition to menopause. So it's all of the changes, hormonal changes, bodily changes that you go through as you gear up towards that day of menopause. And so it's a chapter that can last anywhere between 7 to 10 years on average. So we're talking upwards of a decade of most people's lives. And that has a lot of different symptoms and components to it. And that's what's so interesting about the lack of information about perimenopause and even how long it can last is that so many people, like 90% of people, feel unprepared for this chapter. And I really think it's because it's just not something that we talk about. And I think part of the reason why we don't talk about it is because historically there's been so much stigma around women aging and so much stigma around the biological clock and an expiry date. I'm using quotations. You can't see that. So to speak that like when you stop menstruating, you're past your due date kind of thing. And so I'm fortunate enough to have been running Nix for 10 years. We've tackled a lot of different chapters. We've talked a lot about fertility and the postpartum experience and first periods. And so it only kind of logically made sense that we talk about the last period and this whole invisible period that leads up to it.
And using that word invisible, I think, is interesting as well, because I think not only is this period in life invisible, but I've been reading a lot more about midlife and menopause and this feeling that many women have in our culture of becoming themselves invisible, whether they're seen as less desirable or so. I'll tell you something I'm going through right now. My kids' lives are so demanding. The me part is getting less in this ecosystem, right? There's so much to that. How do you want women to think about, explore, navigating that invisible aspect of this period of our lives?
I think just starting to have a conversation around it and to understand and acknowledge what perimenopause can look like, how it can show up in your life, how it can affect how you feel physically, how you feel mentally, emotionally, and not being afraid to kind of facilitate those conversations. And I really believe that knowledge is power. And we have a long way to go in our medical system. I mean, I come from a family of doctors, so I say this with a lot of love and respect, but women's health has really been overlooked. And so what we're seeing is that oftentimes you have to educate yourself to kind of advocate. And so even if we get to a point of camaraderie, understanding, empathy, that is a great place to be at.
From your first period to your last period, NYX is there for every stage of life. And now NYX is shining a light on the taboo topic of perimenopause, the years-long period leading up to menopause, to help prepare and empower people so they don't feel alone. In their new short manifesto-style film, The Invisible Period, they discuss the different symptoms people experience and what to look at for signs of perimenopause, which can start as early as your 30s. The Invisible Period film debuts on NYX's website and on their social media channels starting November 7th. Go to NYX.com to learn more. So tell us some of the common, quote, first signs that you might be in perimenopause. Are there universal ones? Are there more common ones?
It really is so different person to person. It can show itself in irregular periods. It can show itself in really heavy periods. So I think something like 79% of people will cite that their periods get a lot heavier as they go through perimenopause. It can show in fatigue or fogginess, just like not really feeling like yourself. There's the, you know, I'm going to say cliche, but the more stereotypical things that we've been taught to think of, like hot flashes and being horny or vaginal dryness. But there really are a lot of different symptoms, and everyone's experience is truly unique. But as we've spoken to people, I think one of the most common things that we've heard is, I just don't feel like myself. And to your point, Liz, when you don't feel like yourself and you're in the midst of navigating all of these other new demands on you, you really want to feel centered. And so I think it's really interesting just how many different ways it can manifest itself.
So what do you think it looks like to center people going through perimenopause in a way that is honoring, preparing, empowering, rather than keeping it under wraps, keeping it invisible?
I think as we move towards a culture that is embracing aging a little bit differently, and I do feel like that's happening. I don't know what you would say, Liz, but it's like I see so many women in the media that are 50 plus that are thriving in their careers and candidly like hotter than ever. I don't even understand how it's possible, but it's like, so I think as we sort of change the dialogue around aging and we acknowledge that we're going to live a lot longer as well, hopefully we'll then be a lot more comfortable talking about this chapter. And it would be great to get to a point where, you know, as you're kind of working your way through life, you're aware of what this could look like and you have an eye out for what the symptoms and signs can be. So you can at least acknowledge what's happening to you and then find the best sort of support system that's needed to navigate it.
So what about for you personally? Can you share, like, what are you doing to prepare yourself for this unspoken phase of life?
I mean, I honestly, like I did with our fertility campaign, which was triggered by like my own pregnancy loss, or our life after birth campaign, which was triggered by my own sort of being thrown into the thralls of postpartum. How I prepare for these things is I get Nick to do these campaigns and we sort of like...
I love it.
Because I really, my name's Joe or Joanna, and I really think I'm just like an average Joe in so many different ways. And so if I feel unprepared for something, I kind of feel like a lot of other people must as well. And so just trying to open the door to these conversations. And I've seen time and time again, like it's actually incredible what happens when you extend that olive branch to say, hey, this is a convo I'm willing to have or I'm interested in, just how much kind of outpouring of outreach and contact you get as a result of it.
As a mother yourself, how do you talk about bodies in a way that is just healthy, normal, and natural? And is that different than how you feel like you were spoken to as a kid about bodies?
Yeah, I think we've come a really long way. I mean, certainly with our kids, it's about naming the parts of the anatomy instead of having like nicknames. And I think for me, especially having two young daughters and sort of knowing my own experience of what it was like growing up in a world where so much emphasis was put on your physical appearance. You know, we did this whole campaign 2 years ago called Big Strong Woman, because I really felt like, you know, having a son, there's all this emphasis on like, oh, what a strong little boy, you know, what a big, strong boy. And then for girls, it was always like, oh, what a pretty little girl. And so how do we just like switch that narrative and focus on what being big and strong really means, regardless of your gender, I think is super important as well.
Yeah, I have four boys. So although I talk about periods with my daughter, I think for me, it's been almost more interesting because I've had so many opportunities to talk about it with my boys. And I had my period last week. And of course, my son walked in, my four-year-old, when I was in the bathroom. And he's like, Mom, are you okay? And I was like, yeah, I mean, I get it, you know? And I just said, oh yeah, it's totally normal. It means I'm healthy. And this is just what my body does every month. And he's like, okay, bye, you know? And I remember I had another conversation with my oldest son when we were talking about periods. And I said, you know, if you ever see someone at school who's bleeding, be the person who is supportive and understanding. Never make fun of them or make anyone feel bad. You know, it's a normal part of being a girl. And also, you don't want to be that guy. You want to be that supportive voice. So I don't know. I'm with you. I think that a generation of parents that is being shaped and influenced by conversations like the ones that you're leading, we're getting to see in advertising around periods, like we're seeing blood because that is what happens. And we're able to normalize it and move it out of the shadows and the taboo into everyday conversations so that we can have healthy relationships to our bodies and one another. Like, is that so much to ask?
Exactly. We launched a tween teen line called KT in 2017. So it's been like a minute, but part of the reason for launching that line was in the research, we found that periods were like a top five anxiety driver amongst tweens and teens.
I remember that so clearly.
So do I. It's up there amongst being bullied, making friends, doing well in school. Periods is one of the five. And so it's like, okay, what is it about this very natural part of our biology that we feel so uncomfortable to talk about? And how do we change that narrative going forward? Under that brand, we just launched a book about a month ago called Some Periods. It's like geared to be read to like really younger kids to kind of normalize periods and normalize that conversation around it. It's a really cool illustrated book. And again, it's designed not just to be read to girls who might menstruate, but to all kids so that they can be on the right side of being a positive kind of advocate for people.
Totally. And again, I'm with you. I think it's honestly, something as simple as having a conversation, because when I was growing up, it wasn't really something we're allowed to talk about. And so just normalizing it. I know you partnered with a number of leading experts for the Invisible Period campaign. So can you share more from those experts about how we are affected and how we can prepare for perimenopause? And I'm thinking things like mentally, emotionally, physically, sexually, all these aspects of our lives. How can we get prepared?
Yeah, well, I think one of the reasons why we decided to take this broader approach around experts is that there is a lot of misunderstanding that this is just about the end of your period. And so, you know, wanting to partner with a sexual health expert who can talk about some of the hormonal changes that take place and what that might mean for your sex drive or lack thereof. things as simple as or as complicated as vaginal dryness and how that can show up. Or maybe you're hyper horny all of a sudden and aren't sure what to do with that. You know, emotionally speaking, there's implications around. We've seen, you know, some folks suffer or experience depression. They find themselves having like higher highs and lower lows. And so, you know, being mindful of how it can manifest itself that way and really wanting to take this holistic approach that this is about so much more than just the physicality of your last period. It really manifests itself in so many different ways.
Is there a range of years that are typical for the phase of perimenopause?
Yeah, what's surprising, I think, is it can actually start quite young. Obviously, there's going to be extremes and outliers, but it can start in your mid to late 30s. For most people, it takes place kind of in their 40s, and some people experience it later. But I think as a society, because we put so much focus on that last period, we associate it with taking place several years after it starts. And so as a result, if you just work backwards, you know, maybe you had your last period when you're 45, you could have been in perimenopause for several years before that. And I think that's something that we want to shine a light on, especially for younger women who maybe think that that's a far away kind of chapter that they're nowhere near experiencing, that just to be mindful, that might be the case. You might not experience this for a long time, but if you do find yourself kind of going through it earlier, to know that you're not alone.
It is such an interesting decade of life. And I know it's not set in stone, but that idea of your 40s and kind of shifting in your phase of career and motherhood and your responsibility and role in your family, are there some commonalities to what a lot of people go through in life as they're going through this phase? I think what I'm referencing is I read a book called Hagitude this year, which is really centered on postmenopausal women and really describing this burning away of caring what society thinks about you and the freedom, not just of not having your period, but of becoming a woman of a certain age who is alive for herself and kind of owning unapologetically who she is and taking maybe less stock to what other people think about her. And there is something in that transition in life that I think is just a really interesting one culturally and not always portrayed positively, but maybe has a lot of benefits to offer if we can pay attention and learn from it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's lip service or what it is, but anytime that I read articles associated with people who are being outspoken about aging, oftentimes there's parts of it that, yeah, are hard and it can be challenging to see your body change or the physical side change. But I do hear as well is that there's like this kind of awakening that takes place. And I also think, and this is just, you know, my own perspective, but I really feel like this chapter is different for our generation than it was maybe for ones before. When we spoke about fertility as a brand, really felt that we were in this unique place where we were like one of the first generations to wait till later on in life to have kids, but where things like egg freezing and the different options available to you weren't as widely talked about. And so I think that we are in a different stage. Like if you're going through perimenopause and you have a toddler at home or you have young kids at home, that's a very different perspective than I think we're conditioned to think about, which is like kids are older, maybe you're an empty nester, like everything has kind of shifted. I saw this post on Instagram and I'm going to not get it completely right, but it was sort of like, you know, shout out to the generation of women who are really at this stage where their gender norms are changing. They're trying to do it all. You know what I mean? And in a way that I don't think we've quite figured out yet.
Totally. And we're living through the change. We want it. And we're maybe raising our kids that way, but we don't come from that way of speaking and being. And so there's a weight and an uncertainty around, am I doing this right? Am I not doing enough? And not necessarily having like a North Star out there because it didn't happen yet. We're the ones doing that. I find it can be disorienting, but I try and reframe it as like people like you are pioneers and, you know, there's so many that are going to follow in your footsteps because of the conversations that you're leading, the work that you're doing, and the way that you're standing up and speaking out. And, you know, I do hope for our daughter's generation that a lot of this stuff just comes a lot more naturally. And they are like, what are you talking about, mom? It's not a big deal.
Exactly. That we'll be on the other side of the transition instead of living in it.
That's what keeps us me motivated. Sounds like keeps you motivated too. Joanna Griffiths, thank you so much for joining us on the Motherly Podcast.
Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
Well, that's it for this episode. Thank you so much, Joanna. And thank you for listening to our podcast. We'll be back next week with another great guest. You don't want to miss it. As always, we would love it if you spread the word about the Motherly Podcast. So if you can right now, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Leaving a review takes no more than 30 seconds, but it really helps other people discover our show. And I read all of your feedback. The Motherly Podcast is produced by Jennifer Bassett, with audio editing from Joel Edinburgh. Our associate producer is Olivia Hendrickson. Our music is from the Blue Dot Sessions. I'm your host, Liz Tennedy. Thank you so much for listening.